prezenta il-Mediterrantijaj. Sensila ta' inkontri ma' esperti u riċerkaturi fuq sma' varji tal-istudji tal-Mediterran. Jipprezenta l-program Dr. Norbert Guġeja.
Inselmilkom eżi semmija nilqakom għal puntata oħra mil-program il-Mediterran tijaj. Illum għanna magħna lill-Dr. Virginia Monteforte li hija riċerkatriċi fl-antropologija u koll lettur fl-Università ta' Malta. Il-programm illum se nagħmluh bl-Ingliż anki għall-benefiċċju tal-fatt li l-komunikazzjoni mal-mistidna tagħna tkun aktar faċilitata. Virginia, welcome to our program.
Thanks, Norbert. Thanks for inviting me.
I know that you've been very much interested in also commenting about the title of this program, Il Mediterraneo Tiai, My Mediterranean. It's a title that we picked in order to have our listeners and ourselves reflect on the idea of owning this region in mm-hmm. different ways, and of owning it through research as well.
Yes, actually, while I was thinking about what I should have talked in the program, I started to think about the title of the program too, because actually my Mediterranean, there isn't just one Mediterranean, no, whose many themes and components we approach or we decide to study.
Exactly.
But as many Mediterraneans as the perspectives we adopt about it. And the title reminds us again how we construct each time our subject of study. Like, for instance, something that didn't exist before, and this is quite relevant in anthropology as well, no?
So you're saying that the Mediterranean is also a matter of perception, of approach?
Is this intertwining element of individual and collective and historical, cultural elements, it is also made maybe by the things we think are necessary to be mentioned when we talk about Mediterranean. So we can decide to maybe encourage a narrative or to be in conflict with it. But we have always that model as reference.
Yes. So these narratives of conflict, but also cohabitation, the Mediterranean, it's a region of conviviality, but also a region of conflict. But how can you have these two phenomena of experience living side by side?
Yes, as it was pointed out by many anthropologists, Mediterranean is made by these conflictual elements, or elements that make you feel like part of this family feeling. So you know you're always in the contest, even if when you meet elements and components that are new for you.
I wanted particularly, Virginia, to open up the question of memory in the Mediterranean region today. I know that you've done intensive field research in different locations in the Mediterranean, but particularly in Lipari, and also in Malta.
Yeah, before in Malta, but Lipari was a kind of ritual of passage to anthropology of Mediterranean and to anthropology of memory. There was this collective fieldwork we had. It was in 2003. And in the frame of the study unit in Ethnology of Mediterranean Cultures. And
is there anything that drew you particularly to this island?
Well, it was proposed by my professor, who was incidentally the professor who then proposed me to come to Malta. Okay. So it was very central in my experience.
So it was from one island to another?
Yeah, because I even developed this love for islands from Lipari too, and there I start to approach my interest even to memory and the intertwining with history, with a written history, an institutional way to transmit the past. And in that case, I focused on a very interesting figure of the island. There was this woman who was the daughter of an immigrant from North Europe, who was in Lipari during the Second World War, and she contributed to the building of the first core of what would be the archaeological museum, but she was also the one who started educational system in the island. But at that time, her work, her contribute wasn't recognized yet from an official institutional point of view. So her daughter was fighting for this, you know, and there was so this mixing of her individual memories about her mother and family, and now she wanted her mother became an institutional figure of the history of the island too.
Okay, what does it mean to speak of individual memories and collective memories in the Mediterranean?
This is a sort of debate, actually, not just for the Mediterranean, but for memory studies in general. There are scholars who say that we don't have an individual memory, that our memory is always social, is always socially framed or socially organized, no? Yeah. But then there is these studies from Giovanni Contini about, again, an episode during the Second World War, a massive killing in a village in Italy, where in that case he could retrace an individual memory as opposed to a collective national memory about what was, for instance, the role of the partisans and what happened during this event.
Okay. So the transmission of memory, sort of both from an individual and a collective perspective, is a crucial one, no? It's a very important one. Why would we study, why would we sort of bother to study the transmission of the past into the present? What is the, when we think of the Mediterranean, there's this almost natural association with memory. Why do we think of the region so much as a region of memory? There are many reasons. I mean, there are reasons, political, sociological, historical. But in the context of your research, why does memory become so important, even in the context of Malta?
Well,
you know, you've carried a lot of research about Malta.
Related to memory, Mediterranean is a kind of, is a subject of study which is important both for past and for the present. We can, it is, yes, a subject of study, and anthropological Mediterranean as well, built ad hoc, structured ad hoc during the 60s through conferences, seminars by a group of scholars, anthropologists, historians from North Europe that wanted to make a perimeter
to frame
an object of study, and they created categories, they created an object which was exotic and familiar at the same time. No, and about these categories, for instance, and this is how Mediterranean can still teach us, I think. Mediterranean, we have not take it like an absolute, of course, object or source.
You refer to it as a workshop.
Yeah, it's a workshop.
In what sense is the Mediterranean a workshop?
Because
it's a very interesting idea.
Yeah, it's a very current subject, and it's a workshop for rethinking what concepts, issues, methods also. It's a place where something's always happening somehow in this familiar, exotic, similarities, differences, frame. And talking about categories, there were the production of precise categories like amoral familism, honor and shame, and they thought, okay, we found something which is typical Mediterranean,
Yes, these are the great categories.
It's like the Eldorado, the anthropologist during 60s, 70s. But then the same kind of categories were studied and discovered somewhere else, even on the other side of the world. So these categories in the moment you don't take them as absolute, or you don't link them to a specific place, they can still be useful in that way, you know, Mediterranean can be a kind of workshop to rethink what we are studying.
Yes.
This is to
never get too comfortable, actually.
Yeah, that is, in fact, one of the things of anthropology. And I always say that anthropology is the discipline of disenchantment, but it is a...
Indeed.
It's a positive disenchantment. I'm not saying that in a negative way. So it's an enchanted disenchantment.
Is that also relevant to your experience of Malta as an anthropologist?
Definitely.
How would you describe your fieldwork in Malta?
My field in Malta was... he takes different trajectories. As you might remember, the first time I came here to study the contemporary writers
and
their construction, actually, of a cultural and literary field. But then during that research, already started to come out issues related to the past, to the memory, to a political memory, to a divided memory as well. So then a few years later, when I started my PhD, I decided to focus on it. Yes, even because I wanted to come back here, basically.
Yes. So there's this intertwining as well of your professional and personal interests.
Yeah.
But how would you describe the literature of Malta? I know that you're familiar with the contemporary writers. I know that you've translated works of literature emerging from Malta. What is the sense, the character that you get?
I can say now, if compared with what I was studying 15 years ago, at this point, is that figures that were more fighting for their... position now are more established, but I won't names, but they remain faithful to what they were fighting already 15 years ago.
And how would you describe sort of the character of this literature? I'm obviously interested in this because there's a pair of eyes that has more objectivity than my own, I would say, to put it bluntly, on this literature. So it is there are emerging characteristics. There's an emerging poetry. There are forms of narrative that are building up and that connect to other places in the Mediterranean as well, in very powerful ways.
It's a very fluid literature, actually, and I happen at to know it deeply because I happen to translate also some poets and also Claire Zopardi's collection of stories.
Yes.
It's a language which reminds me a lot the one of Murakami. It's very simple and in classical literature we would have defined it as a ethic.
Okay.
Language.
Yeah.
Very clean, but then there are embedded in simple sentences and words a lot of meanings and a lot of words behind simple sentences. And
I know you are, of course, very interested in classical culture and literature. What's your interest here? How did you come to be interested in this aspect of Mediterranean writing?
Well, I was always into classical literature and classical culture because of my high school studies too. And coming from Rome is something we are always surrounded. Yes, I mean
you can't avoid it. Have you tried to?
Yes, this is a quite nerdy thing to say, but I remember I used to go to the Roman forum with my collection of poems from Catullo or the Rerum Natura of Lucrezio to read it
on the spot.
On the spot, yes, in the ruins, I know. But related even to Mediterranean, I think it's still a very important component in Mediterranean studies. And again, when I was studying here, I was researching about politics and memory, and what is even the fighting for a moral capital between the two memories and emotions and feelings related to it, and also a discourse about bodies and victims and how they are used in the transmission of memory. There was this component which is very linked to Maltese history, but also to Mediterranean, to classical culture, which is the blood.
Yes.
No?
Yes.
And to describe better what I was wanted to say about this this object, this this symbol too. Yeah. I used a Sicilian expression, because
okay.
I was talking about the language of
yeah.
the blood and how blood means not just death, but even power and life. And
yes.
this expression is Lusangu falumurmuru, which is
okay.
blood murmurs.
This is a Sicilian expression.
It's, yeah, yes. I don't know if something similar does exist in Maltese. Something which refers to this continuous murmuring
yes,
of
yes.
blood.
This is like the murmuring of blood.
Yes,
yes
like
yes.
Blood is there to recall something that should be done.
Yes, yes, it's not a living.
To,
a
yes.
living. Yeah. There might be an expression. I couldn't think off the cuff of an expression, but there are all around the Mediterranean literal, there are expressions related related to blood.
Yeah, and this tells a lot about all these recalling, all these echoes that we find. And this fact of blood like something talking is something we find, for instance, in Virgilio. There
yes.
is this episode of Enea, the first time he landed, and he was in Thrace, and he thought he would have started, he would have founded his city there. So with all his companions, they went to collect branches, and
yes.
as soon as he broke this myrtle branch, blood started
to ooze
come out
of the myrtle
no?
branch.
And the voice also
yes.
of
yes.
the person of this kid was one of the children of Priamo, who was killed there, and actually the myrtle was the result of metamorphosis of the arrows, which killed him.
Yes, yes, yes.
And then the same episode was taken, for instance, from Dante, when he meets the suicides. He uses the same narrative kind of expedient,
yes.
no? The blood
yes.
coming out. And this is an episode even that reminds us how memory somehow works, no? It starts from an object, from a place.
And this is know? this is a particularly interesting this notion of space. I mean, even classical literature itself is in many ways a literature of space. How do you conceive of the Mediterranean region in terms of space? And what is the relationship between writing and space? I'm asking a very generic question.
But
it seems to me that there are very obviously suggestive spaces in literature
writing,
around the Mediterranean.
Well, it can be very placed and linked to a space, but it can be always a way to go beyond the space where we find confined, no?
Yes. Yeah, exactly. It's almost the space
it's,
is like a key or a doorway.
But it's always a point of departure. We always write with a given space in mind, something that maybe we saw just for a few seconds, or a place we live in, a place we love to live in.
Yes, yes. And obviously the sea itself becomes a quintessential space, right?
Yeah.
And the sea itself, I know you've worked also on narratives of migration.
Yes.
And the ways in which migration redefines the space of the sea for us. What can you tell me about your experience? I know you've had an interesting project called RIMA.
Yes, it's still on.
It's still on.
Now it's an NGO, actually.
Okay. And what is it all about? What is the context behind this initiative?
Well, it is to rethink collectively the discourses about migration more than migration itself. So all the rhetorics, the discourses, the images and the imaginarium that are produced around what we call migration. And
very often we think of migration in a vacuum, as if it's just a phenomenon of people crossing the sea. And
Or a matter of numbers or news we read.
Exactly.
And, we did a lot of different projects, film festival. We also produced a short film, exhibitions, workshops. And we tried to think together with the people implied that were in in migration, what to them, not just migration meant, but even what was to them to reconstruct daily life elsewhere. And we addressed, because now when migration is always depicted as someone concerning a part of the world or just a particular groups of people, but it's something that concerns all of us and people coming from all over the world, especially here in Malta.
Okay, the whole context of referring to Malta again, the whole context of political history. Mm-hmm. And the relationship between memory and political history. I know you've had a special interest also in this direction.
Yes, and talking about this, for instance, I was even talking about categories before. Since one of my favorite categories, the one of honor and shame, I actually find myself to use it to talk about
this
transmission
sort
of memory.
Yes, so this category of honor and shame, right, which has been written upon by Michael Hertzfeld and so on and so forth, but it still holds importance, right? You still find use for it.
It's a very interesting category because it deals with a lot of components. It's something intimate, but at the same time social. It recalls gender issues, and even the way it's a judgment, it's a conduct, it's something which is strongly symbolic but with practical consequences.
Yes. But what does it mean when we speak of these categories of honor and shame? What are we talking about here? Is it an ethnographic reflection on the characters of Mediterranean communities? Is it still possible to speak in such terms?
Well, I found it very relevant when I was talking about, for instance, the this conflict between the two memories and how much feelings are linked to a transmission of memory. And For instance, in this case, the fact that you don't express a feeling can be perceived as something outrageous, something immoral.
Yes.
And any link with these days is incidental, but
indeed. Is there, if you had to think of sort of shared grounds or common ground between your experience of Malta as an island and other islands in the Mediterranean, what would you say about that? Is the issue of speaking about the Mediterranean in common terms, as in terms of seeking similarities, and at the same time we speak of contamination, of hybridity, of a region of difference. Where do you stand on this? Is it possible to speak of such a thing as the Mediterranean? Is it simply a geopolitical marker? Is it these sort of different locations we've been speaking about, say Lipari, Malta, sort of the region of classical literature, the Hellenic or the Roman regions? I mean, these are very open questions, I think it's important that we reflect on these matters.
When I went to Lipari, I found exactly what I was expecting to find. When I came to Malta, I came here the first time because I had to choose if I come back to Lipari to continue that study or to come here. And I chose to come here because it was a place I didn't know at all at that time. And I found Malta very atypical as a Mediterranean island. And okay. I remember that, for instance, this is something I immediately thought, even 15 years ago, that in Malta, when you are looking for Mediterranean, you find the British. When you're looking for the British component, you find the Mediterranean. So it's always something that...
elusive, in many
yeah,
ways.
Elusive.
Yes.
Totally.
Virginia, I know that you've brought two books with you to share with our listeners as we move towards concluding the session. Would you mind telling us about them and introducing them to our readers?
Yes, I brought two Italian books. One is from Leonardo Sciascia. It's a collection of stories entitled Il mare, colore del vino. And the other is from Cesare Pavese, Dialoghi con Leucò. The first book is, I was reading again these days, and it's a kind of compendium actually of Mediterranean aspects, or what we expect to be Mediterranean, like a manual actually. There is, for instance, one story about a rivalry between two villages, which is redeemed by marriage.
Yes.
There is another story about religious and political fanatism.
Okay.
Embodied by a husband and a wife. And there is the component of the mafia, where two people are discussing about the etymology of...
And obviously Sciascia is very strong in that sense.
And then there is, this other Dialoghi con Leucò by Pavese. It's, there are
Cesare
dialogues.
Pavese, right?
Yes. Yeah. And there are a series of dialogues about universal themes, but between, imagined between mythical figures.
Okay.
And,
Yeah.
About the necessity, actually, of the myth.
Of the myth.
Today, yes.
And the myths we live by, and the myths we hope for, and the myths that face us all the time.
And now myths can be still a universal thing.
Yes. Thank you so much, Dr. Virginia Monteforte. Grazie, Hafna. Esiste mia kellna magħna llum il-Dr. Virginia Monteforte. Perswas li kienet diskussjoni interessanti għalikom, jiena nkun magħkom għal puntata oħra tal-Mediterran tiegħi l-ġimgħa d-dieħla. Nirringrazzjakom.
Għadkom kemm smajtu il-Mediterran tiegħi. Bi produzzjoni u prezentazzjoni ta' Dr. Norbert Buġejja.